This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
95.7 The Game's John Dickinson has been with the Warriors every day throughout the championship era.
Half court, the Warriors start to celebrate. The one-time darlings are now a dynasty.
And now, he brings you the latest scoops on the back-to-back champs.
He's looking good to go.
And exclusive player interviews.
What's up, Dub Nation? It's your boy, Stephen Curry.
This is Warriors Weekly on the 95.7 The Game Podcast Network. Now, here's your host, John Dickinson.
Warriors Weekly Podcast Episode 3. John Dickinson joined this week by Matt Steinmetz. It's not like we, you know, don't see enough of each other or do enough radio together, Matt. So we got to, you know, throw you on the podcast as well here in episode 3. We've already had Guru.
Okay.
And the first week was just a solo week where I kind of set the table. And then we had Mike Brown, Warriors associate head coach, who I know you got a chance to talk to earlier in the week as well with Guru. Couldn't think of a better way to tip off this podcast. But yeah, now we're getting to the meat of the order, the heavy hitters. So batting third in our lineup is you, Steiny.
Isn't that usually where they put the best hitter on the team?
Yeah, best hitter on the team, right there. And a lot of the analytics guys now, they move it up to two. But I'm a traditionalist,
three, yeah.
So I want the best hitter to hit third.
Right.
So
they want that extra at bat, what, 19 times a year,
yeah,
maybe?
Exactly. Okay. That makes all the difference in the world. So the Warriors add Andrew Bogut into the mix this week. And they do it with DeMarcus Cousins missing a couple of games due to injury. You know, Andrew Bogut and Stephen Curry joked about this after the game against San Antonio, how you see YouTube highlights of a guy and you think, you know, what's it going to look like? You know, he looks pretty good. Can that translate? I actually thought watching Bogut, he translated, and Stephen Curry joked he thought the same thing. I mean, the YouTube clips of him playing in Australia matched what we saw on the court, I think, on an NBA level.
Well, how many times have you heard or seen maybe, hey, this guy's in the best shape of his life. He's lighter than he ever was, and he gets in, and you're like, he doesn't look that much lighter. But anyway, Bogut does look like he's in good shape, and he played 19 minutes in his debut. He's starting against Minnesota the following night, so he's going to be able to play a back-to-back. What struck me from the game against the Spurs, JD, is, you know, if you're telling me that Bogut can give you 20 minutes as a legitimate center, to me, it gives Kerr just one more option of, if he wants to, he can play big for as long as he wants now. If he wants to play 40-plus minutes a game using a traditional center, he can do that with these two guys. Now, that's not really the way the Warriors made their bread and butter over the years, but also I think there might be another side benefit to this, and that is if you're going to have Cousins play 26, 27 minutes, if you can jam Bogut in for 12 or 14 minutes, what that also does is it means Draymond Green doesn't have to guard a five as much as he does now. So that might be a side benefit that's really beneficial, that Draymond Green will play less five, and the only time he has to play five is when it's really, really important.
Yeah, I was impressed with the body type for Andrew Bogut, because it was pretty simple. I think he's in better shape than he was in when he last played for the Warriors at the end of 2016. I know he was banged up and missed the last couple of the games of the finals, but he looked like a guy that was banged up and had played a lot of games and frankly was a little heavy back then. I mean, he looks like he's in better condition now than he was even then. Now, how does that hold up 3 years later with him being older? I'm not sure, but the luxury that the Warriors have in this thing is they could not play him at all. They could play him 8 minutes a game, or they could play him between 20 and 28 minutes a game, I think, in an emergency, especially if you know that you're going to only play him a couple of times a week or in certain matchups.
I think the thing that sticks out to me is just the overall talent level of the Warriors. They added Andrew Bogut. All right, so look at their five position. It's their five position, the center spot, and they've got DeMarcus Cousins and Andrew Bogut. Those are two of the most skilled centers in the league. Now, I'm not saying Bogut's one of the best centers in the league. I'm saying he's one of the most skilled centers in the league. So if you're telling me you've got DeMarcus Cousins and Andrew Bogut, two phenomenal passers from the five spot, well, it's a wrap. Because the Warriors, I don't know if you've noticed, have Curry, Klay Thompson, and Durant. So if you're telling me their fives can pass the hell out of it, we know that Draymond can pass. I just don't see how it's going to be defensible, really.
Well, and I think you could almost put Andrew Bogut in the game to help get your offense in line. You know, similar to the way Iguodala goes in the game, you know, to get the offensive line in line, obviously from a different position, but there's certain sets that I think they'll be able to run that maybe they haven't been able to run since Andrew Bogut left them, just based on his passing ability and knowledge of where Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson in particular like to get the basketball. I mean, he spoke after his debut against San Antonio about the fact that he's just learning all of the new players and where they like to get the ball. But he knows where Curry likes to get it. He knows where Klay Thompson likes to get it. And he's a pretty intelligent basketball player and a very crafty passer. So I think it's an element of we focus on the defense and the body type and those kinds of things. But the offensive stability that he could provide if the Warriors are a little scattered, I think, is another element, and maybe an element that nobody really thought of.
Yeah, and the other thing is they can both, and I mean Cousins and Bogut, play high or low. So you can throw it into Bogut in the low post. Now, it's not necessarily for him to go to work and score, but the defense has to react in some way. And if they don't, well, then you let him go one-on-one once or twice, just to see what he can do. But that's the other thing. I mean, they're interchangeable in a lot of ways. I almost want to say they're kind of similar in a lot of ways. But obviously, DeMarcus Cousins is an infinitely better scorer, both in the low post and with his ability to face up. But they both have the same kind of skill level, so that if you go to Bogut, you can still use him to pass. You can use him to rim protect. You can use him to try to, contain a penetrator up near the perimeter. I mean, they all of a sudden got deep at the center position.
Yeah, and they have options. They have two big bodies. They have two smaller types, Kevon Looney, Jordan Bell. You may just have to kick that chair away. You've been trying to get comfortable. We should let everybody know. You've been trying to get comfortable in this chair for the 5-6 minutes that we've been recording
new.
Here.
Nothing new. So the other day I was doing a show with Guru.
Sure.
And I see the text line and it says, gosh, this is fun to watch you guys. Steinmetz just gets up and sits down all the time. And I'm saying to Guru, how does this guy know?
Yeah, because you're on the camera.
And then I forgot. They have that camera. Yeah, it's kind of my thing, my tag. Stand up, sit down, move the mic.
But it looks like you can't get that chair at the right level for where the microphone is at.
No, I can't roll it over the carpet.
Oh, okay.
See what I'm saying? It's getting stuck.
I got you. So it just, you never
so
really.
I'll go with the stand for the next 8 minutes.
Well, the good news is nobody's watching us
record this,
except for our guy Nash.
He's good.
In here.
That is good.
Yeah, one of the other things I always like to get into with you is matchups, potential matchups. And look, the standings are just you don't know who's going to end up first or second now between the Warriors or the Nuggets. You don't know who's going to be really 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8 at this point either. And the Rockets are only a game or two above, even that fray at this point in time. Anything change about San Antonio for you? I know they're working their way up the standings.
Yeah.
I mean, they play much differently at home. I mean, they're the equivalent of a 60-win team at home, and then they're the equivalent of, I don't know, a 27-28-win team on the road.
I think if you're a Warrior fan, I wouldn't even worry about the first round yet because it's so volatile. I mean, 5 days ago, we would have never thought – Oklahoma City could end up 8.
And they're out.
Right. And they're one game out. Before the season started, nobody thought Utah was going to be down near the bottom, 7 or 8. I think a lot of people didn't even expect the Clippers to be there. So, yeah, I think I wouldn't worry about it right now if I were Warriors fans, because I think it's almost a flip of the coin. Now, who do you want is another question.
Who do you want if you're the Warriors?
I'm still taking the Spurs if I'm looking for the easiest series.
Let's kind of run through and rank
Utah.
Them.
Oh, well, Oakland, first round.
First round series, what would be the easiest series?
Spurs is what I think.
Okay, and why do you think that?
I just don't think they can beat the Warriors more than once in a series. That's all. The Warriors have beaten them 2 years ago in a sweep, last year in 5 games, and I don't really think they're as good as they were 2 years ago.
Okay, where else would you go with it? What would the next?
Clippers.
Clippers would be the easiest, you think?
Next easiest.
Just lack of experience and...
Yes.
No superstar.
There's an unknown there. There's an unknown. That's a team we don't really know about. They haven't played the Warriors that much.
They seem like the team that would be most apt to maybe get into a brawl that might linger into the next series against the Warriors.
Well, and the reason I'm saying this about the Clippers, JD, is because if you look at the potential first round matchups, you got the Spurs. Well, they've played those guys in the last 2 years. You got the Jazz. We kind of know what to expect in one of those series. It'll probably be ugly, but the Jazz just can't score enough. And then if Oklahoma City falls to 8, we know all about Oklahoma City. So the thing about the Clippers that makes it interesting to me is we haven't seen that matchup with the Warriors, at least with this group.
And Utah, you think, could be an ugly style of game.
Right, but I do think, and you were the guy who brought this up. I mean, if they get Oklahoma City, Utah, Houston, and then Toronto or Boston.
That's tough.
That's as tough as it gets. But if you get the Spurs, the Blazers, and the Nuggets, and you waltz into the finals, that's a lot different.
Well, and it's interesting now because, as it stands, and again, it could go a million different directions, but, Portland could be a second-round opponent, and that's an opponent that, can beat the Warriors from time to time, but the Warriors are very comfortable against them. Maybe San Antonio becomes a team that could get into that mix for a second-round opponent, and like you said, you think that's a team that the Warriors could handle. And then Denver. I mean, if Denver winds up getting a path that favors them, where maybe they don't have to play Oklahoma City or Houston for a while, maybe they could wind up being in the conference final, and the conference final ends up being a little easier than maybe even the second round for the Warriors.
If the Nuggets and Warriors end up 1-2 or 2-1, they will not meet in the Western Conference Finals. That would be my prediction. I don't think Denver can win 2 series.
What if the Rockets end up 4th and the Warriors end up 1st?
Then they play them in the second round, right? The Warriors would play Houston in the second round.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. What I mean is then Denver would be left in the back end of that. I mean, what if Denver, Denver gets to play the Clippers and
I don't know.
And somebody knocks out Oklahoma City and...
No, I don't. I think they're going to win a round, but I don't know that they're going to be able to win too.
All right, final topic here is we got Matt Steinmetz on the Warriors Weekly podcast with John Dickinson. Sam Amick going to join me as well from The Athletic here.
Maybe
coming
he's
up
the four hitter
in just a moment.
I can live with that.
Yeah, Sam's a heavy hitter.
Yeah, I can live with Sam as the four, number four hitter.
Just as long as we don't bring Guru back. What if we bring Fortenbaugh in next week?
I'd bring Fortenbaugh in a couple weeks.
Couple weeks?
Yeah.
More of like a 6-7?
Seven. Yeah. 7-8, maybe.
Okay. All right, 7-8. The demeanor of this Warriors team. Where are you on the demeanor? I know that's something that changes, I think, as frequently as the standings do in the Western Conference. This team back to liking each other?
No. I think it's all run its course. And they all kind of know. Did you see Draymond's quote from a few days ago? If he go, he go. That's going to be like the I'm always a Warriors, Monte Ellis. But basically Draymond Green says, if Kevin stays, he stays. If he goes, he goes. And I'll tell you what, if he goes, we're still going to win the championship this year. That told me that they kind of know. And there's an understanding. I don't even think it's anything they talk about. They know. This is the last run. The last year for this particular team. And so I think that's going to help them even if there are some bumps along the way. I really do. Because they're smart enough to know the only thing that could mess this up is kind of their own selves. I really think they've understood that or understand that, and that they're gonna be good enough to win it all this year.
Well, and the one thing that the Warriors have going for them still is the fact that they are the most talented team, and it's not like Kevin Durant is going to not show up in the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, if there's one thing Kevin Durant has done when he's been healthy, it's been raise his game to a difference-making level, maybe even more so than he has in the regular season when the Warriors have needed him, and the Warriors in the playoffs have at times gone to him to bail yep. them out, whether it's against LeBron James or against the Rockets, and he's been there to do it in the biggest moments.
He's had a way of getting them buckets at really important times, and he gets them without four other guys a lot of times having to do anything, and that's so valuable in the NBA because there's so many times it comes down to the last 3 or 4 minutes and buckets are hard to come by. It's so nice to just be able to throw it to Kevin Durant and know that he can get a 17-footer anytime he wants, and he's probably going to knock it down. The balance, of course, is you don't want to do too much of that, particularly in the first three and a half quarters of a game. But I tell you what, it's always fun, JD, to hear about a player or to watch a player from afar, see him play 8-10 times a year, and then he gets traded and you see him 82 times a year.
And you realize, wow.
Yes. And so the one thing that Kevin Durant's better than I thought he was. Let's put it that
yeah.
way. From the days in Oklahoma City.
And we all thought he was great.
Yes. And I'm not saying, well, he got here and he improved. I'm sure he did to some extent, but I mean,
it's a real deal.
Like Kevin Durant for me has gone from, man, he's a great player to he might be one of the best of all time. Like, he can lay claim to a top 10 or top 15, maybe. Now, I don't want to get into that now, but
sure.
I think that's where he's at right now.
We'll save that one for the next time you come around in
cool.
the order. Is there anything the last 12 or 13 games, aside from injury, that would worry you? Do you think that the Warriors are at a point where, because to me it would be one blow up. You can't have any more, you can't have another Draymond Durant kind of a thing. You can't have something, even if the media doesn't find out about it. That's the one thing. You can't have that one almost fracturing moment between now and the end of the year. And we've talked about it a lot
yeah.
on Warriors this week, how it almost feels like this team is just hanging on to try and get to the playoffs, and then maybe the mood or at least the focus will change, which will keep everybody together. I actually think these last handful of games, 10, 12, 13 games, it's a little bit of a fragile kind of a danger zone. Is there anything that would worry you along those lines?
Well, I was just thinking about that because obviously the first thing is injury. I mean, one injury changes things dramatically if it's in their top 6 or 7. So other than that, you're right. I mean, what could really worry you? So this is what I've come up with. If there's 12, 13, 14 games and they go 8-6 from this point on, or 7-7, maybe even 8-6 or 8-7, something like that, that would raise my eyebrows a little bit because they're trying to be better than that going into the playoffs, and they can't deny it. They are trying to get momentum into the playoffs. So they go 7-7 on the way in. That tells me they couldn't execute the one thing they wanted to do most.
Matt Steinmetz, thanks a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Warriors Weekly Podcast. Hey, we'll talk to you. Want to talk to you. All right, joining me now on the Warriors Weekly, Sam Amick of The Athletic. And he had a great piece in The Athletic that you should definitely check out. Talking about whether or not the Warriors should be feared and kind of gauging the pulse of some different players in the league as well. Of course, some great quotes from Draymond Green in that piece, in addition to everything else. And Sam joins me now here on Warriors Weekly. Sam, thanks a lot for the time. Really appreciate it. How are you?
JD, I'm doing great. I'm joining you from the old Kings game here. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, it should be a good chat here. And I'll just come out and ask you straight up, just kind of lay out how that piece came to mind. Because, I mean, the Warriors have been up and down this season. I mean, I did the
right
math on it a little bit today. They're 10-1, and then they're 13-12. And then I believe they're 18-2, and now they're 6-7 at the point where we're recording this in their last 13 games. Has the league caught up? Give us your gauge on that, and then the people you talk to about it as well.
So to your first question, I mean, the genesis of it is one of my favorite parts of being at the Athletic, and I know I sound like a shameless commercial, but it's true, is it just the freedom to have different stories concept-wise. And I wrote earlier in the year about, from the Warriors' perspective, who they might fear and kind of what they thought of other elite teams. And that was an interesting kind of thought exercise.
Boston, 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 right, Sam?
Yeah, a lot of Boston, a lot of Boston. And so, you know, that was fascinating. I think readers, fans in general, just enjoy, as much as we love talk radio, we love, you know, having to give people our perspective. They want to know what these players actually think. And so this was taking that idea in the other direction. And I was in Oklahoma City. I was also in Indiana with Oklahoma City and talked to Markieff Morris. Was probably the guy that got the story going, because he was super candid and essentially said that I think the Warriors are definitely more beatable now. Said that he thought the drama they've been through was very real, is beyond basketball. And I was pretty surprised by his perspective. Then I ended up trying to connect with Paul George, Steven Adams, and see what they thought. Even Russell Westbrook, he wasn't very loquacious, but I gave it a shot. And then rather than just have the perspective on one side, Draymond's always a great quote, and I kind of brought their views to him to see what he thought. And not shockingly, you know, he was pretty confident, pretty kind of defiant at this idea that they shouldn't be feared.
Yeah, and well, and I guess to kind of lay it out, Sam, do you think it's lip service from Draymond Green at that point, just the typical defiance, or do you think there is this ability, as he referred to almost compartmentalize, you know, everything that's gone on with this team in an attempt to find that, you know, common goal, which is to win that third championship in a row?
I think, 100% it's possible, probable even. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm not a sports media guy and I'm at the Vegas book and I'm putting my money down, I'm probably still going with the Warriors. So I think it's just a lot more complicated and nuanced than in past years, because, kind of like I wrote, you've got the DeMarcus Cousins component, which continues to be a new thing that you're trying to iron out. And some nights it's great, some nights it's a little trickier. You know, you've got the fatigue factor, which is always part of their journey. But, you know, I feel like they've been doing this so long now, JD, that it's like compound interest. Like, you're going 5 years strong, 82 in the regular season, you know, however many in the postseason. So the fatigue is a very real thing. Then you have the idea that, you know, that I think the depth on the second unit is not what it used to be. So you go out and get a familiar face in Andrew Bogut. So, you know, they've got all their stuff that they're trying to work on. But on the flip side, and this is what I loved about Markieff's point of view, was, like you kind of alluded to earlier, the rest of the league has been strategizing with one goal in mind, which is to figure out what the Warriors do and combat it for years now. And they have changed their approach. They've changed their rosters. And I think that's playing a part, too. I do think you're seeing the league catch up to them.
Well, and then the next question is, is there that team that can get them this year if the Warriors are engaged and if the Warriors are fully healthy? Because there doesn't seem to be, at least from where I sit, a team that's even the Rockets of a year ago. Now, I know we talked, you know, off the air a couple of weeks ago about Milwaukee. I think I saw you when Milwaukee played in Sacramento a couple of weeks ago,
right,
when they were out
right
west. And I know you've been impressed with them, and they've got, you know, injury issues of their own. But do you see a team that is maybe the Houston of last year?
Well, Milwaukee still, I mean, if let's talk finals matchups, that could be the team. You know what I mean? Malcolm Brogdon getting hurt is a big deal. But if they kind of get lucky on the health front with him, he could be back by the second round. Maybe in the end, that's not as big a deal as we thought. He's a huge piece for him. I know a lot of listeners in the Bay might have never even heard of Malcolm, but he's a two-way player, very important for what they do.
Well,
so I'm not giving up. Oh, go ahead, brother.
No, I just was jumping. And somebody that I'd heard the Warriors were pretty high on themselves if they could have got their hands on him, but Milwaukee ended up taking him. You know, they ended up taking him before that could happen.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, and it's to be a rookie of the year, as he was, you know, when he first came into the league as a second rounder, is pretty darn good. And he just, I mean, I actually didn't know this until I read it today. He's going to become the eighth guy in NBA history to tally the good old 50-40-90 mark, 50% from the field overall, 40 from three-point range, 90 from the free throw line. He's extremely accurate, and he defends like crazy. So he's important. But if you got to look at the West, I mean, the Rockets, you know, other than that loss to the Warriors, have been spectacular of late. And so I'm not giving up on them. In fact, if anything, I probably gave up on them earlier in the year, and now I'm really starting to buy what they're selling again. Daryl Morey, head of their front office, has made a bunch of moves all year long. Never imagined that somebody like Kenneth Faried would be playing meaningful minutes and actually really fitting in nicely with them like he is. You know, Chris Paul's health is front and center when it comes to their chances of being that team. But, you know, we'll see. Even OKC, as bad as they've been lately, I think in the context of a seven-game series, could, you know, give the Warriors at least a run.
Sam Amick of The Athletic joining me, Warriors Weekly, 95.7 The Game. And Sam, I'll go back to this because the nature of the Warriors season really has been, you know, encapsulated with the last week. You look at, you know, the awful loss at home to Phoenix, then they go out on the road and they take care of Houston. They you know, dismantle Oklahoma City and make that look like it would be a favorable matchup for the Warriors if those two teams wind up, you know, facing each other. But when you look at it, is there anything beyond an injury that you think could happen with this team between now and the end of the regular season that could maybe create an unrepairable fracture? Because to me, that's the thing to look at in these final games. It's not even wins and losses or who ends up one or who ends up two or who winds up, you know, in what slot and what seed in the West. It's almost, can they take another blow in terms of chemistry or locker room, and how do they avoid having that happen? I mean, do you foresee anything that could happen that could carry into the playoffs? Because I almost view it as if they can get to the playoffs, then they're going to be fine. It's getting through that next, you know, what is it, 3 weeks now, 3.5 weeks that could be the problem.
So I'm mostly with you. I'm going to endorse the premise from the standpoint of that next thing could be very problematic. I don't agree with you in terms of once you get to the playoffs, you're in the clear. In fact, I'd probably flip it the other way and say, because of the pressure that comes with the playoffs and the lack of breathing room or kind of, you know, competitive margin between you and your opponent, you don't have time or energy or emotion to have anything that could derail you as a group. And if you do, and if it takes you a couple days to get over it, guess what? You just drop two games in a seven-game series, and that's a wrap. You're done. So I do think something like that could happen. I continue to feel as if the locker room in general is just not nearly as kind of enjoyable as it was a few years ago. I even told Draymond that, just flat out said to him, from a media standpoint, we tend to walk away feeling like, man, these guys are tight, you know, and he didn't necessarily disagree. He just kind of nodded. So I think partly that's why you go out and get an Andrew Bogut, you know, with a personality like his, and kind of another distraction. So once you get in the playoffs, you got to keep that stuff in check. And I also think that, you know, it was interesting last week when you had multiple reporters in the Bay essentially reporting that there was some frustration from players in Steve Kerr's direction as it related to, you know, defending players against the officials, and just like a weird sort of kind of undertinge of frustration that was unique to their story. It's been a love affair for the most part, other than the one Draymond flare-up with Steve a couple of years ago. So to me, that's the kind of stuff that we'll be monitoring going forward.
How much do you think Andrew Bogut can help that situation? Because that is something that could be maybe an underrated aspect of adding him into this mix.
I think it's big because, honestly, I would love, I have not had, you know, an on or off the record discussion with Steve Kerr about Bogut since they brought him back, or even when they were thinking about it. If he, you know, and this is something he probably wouldn't be willing to chat about till the off season anyway, but I would love to know in his heart of hearts, like, where his head was at, and Bob Myers too, obviously. But I feel like from a psychological standpoint, it's a heck of a way to remind everybody in that locker room that this is a story that started, you know, not 6 months ago, not a year ago. That this thing is a journey that began with that team that went out and eventually won 73 games and and won the title the year before that, and he was part of it. I feel like it kind of ties it up and it almost brings the old era together with the new era in a kind of way that if I'm one of those players, if I'm even Steph, even Clay, guys who are, you know, probably love the fact that now another human being in that room kind of reminds you of what you did in the beginning of it all. You know, I think that could play a part. Just the chemistry is a fickle thing, and moods are certainly fickle. And I think Andrew, he is, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, a smart ass. And he's a guy that, you know, I think is going to keep things loose. And now that he jumps on board late in the year here.
Final question for you, Sam. If I had to say, what would the most difficult path to a championship be for the Golden State Warriors? I'm asking you for four opponents. What would the most difficult path be to a title?
San Antonio. I don't have the brackets in front of me, so you're
well. It changes. You can pick whoever you want because it changes. I mean, San Antonio's all the way up to five now.
So, yeah.
And there's a game separating three from eight at this point, or maybe two games between three and eight. So you can pick
right.
any four.
I mean, San Antonio, OKC, Houston, and toughest matchup in the East. Man, that's a tough one. I've been bullish on Milwaukee. I'm tempted to go with Toronto. I think Kawhi's history as a championship-level player, Danny Green. I'll go with Toronto. I'll say Toronto in the final.
Okay, that's a good one. How impressed have you been with the Spurs and their hot streak of late? They almost made me want to change my opinion of them, just
you know,
watching them against the Warriors and then watching them kind of get hot here. I know they've been terrible on the road and great at home all year, but that was a pretty impressive win they had over the Warriors, even shorthanded.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it really was. I mean, I've been impressed enough that every so often, you know, you and I talk about the industry, and on as far as my role, I'm supposed to have a decent level of coverage all across the NBA, and the Spurs story is the latest one where I end up going, man, I'm kind of asleep at the wheel here because I need to learn more about this group that is far better than I realized. And I watched it last night trying to, you know, figure out Derek White, who's just kind of burst on the scene, guy who's in his second year doing really good things. And just it's incredible. So I've been impressed. I mean, Greg Popovich, all of a sudden, I mean, legitimately put himself back in the Coach of the Year discussion. I wrote something a couple weeks ago about Coach of the Year, and I didn't even have him in my top three, you know, but what he's done is something else. And it's wild to watch. I don't know if it's 100% for real when it comes to being this dominant, and, you know, 8-9 in a row, whatever it is, but it's a lot better than we thought it was going to be, especially back when DeJounte Murray got hurt at the beginning of the year.
Well, yeah, and you left them out because 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, they weren't that good, right? I mean, it really is. I mean, you look at it now, and it's, you know, it's just been an emphatic run down the stretch of the season. Sam, I really appreciate the time. Thanks a lot for coming on, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, JD. Thanks, brother.
All right, Sam Amick of The Athletic, and really a tremendous piece about should the Warriors be feared. A lot of great quotes in there from Draymond Green and Markieff Morris and others. So definitely check it out over at The Athletic.
This was a production of the 95.7 The Game Podcast Network.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.